Now, on the line, I have Terry Morrissey, and she is the CEO of the Psychological Society of Ireland, and she's going to talk to us all about the Psychological Society's annual conference 2018, and I believe this is their 48th annual conference. Good morning, Terry. How are you?
Good morning. I'm very well. Speaking from Wexford.
And is it as damp in Wexford as it is here in Dublin?
Well, I don't know what it's like in Dublin, but actually, I can actually see blue sky. It's quieting down here, so it's not raining at the moment.
Well, aren't you lucky? I was going to nearly say, is that kind of blue sky thinking?
But well, it's not wishful thinking. I can actually, I have evidence of my eyes.
Well, I tell you, it's well, it was when I was coming in, it was dull and dark and very, very damp.
Well, maybe this is coming your way.
We'll keep our fingers crossed and hopefully so. But Terry, your annual conference is starting today, I believe.
Well, we have pre-conference workshops today. We have the formal opening tonight and then it runs till Saturday.
And I believe the Minister of State for Mental Health and Older People, Jim Daly, is going to kick it off.
Well, that's our hope. He's accepted our invitation, but you know, politics. We will always know when he actually turns up. But he's due to be here this evening. Yes.
Maybe you could give us an overview of what you're going to be covering this year.
Okay, well, as you say, it's our 48th annual conference. We celebrate our 50th anniversary in 2020, so that'd be 50 years of Irish Psychologists Members Organisation. This year, we're looking at the theme of transitions, and we picked transitions because transitions are times of uncertainty. You have to move from one place to another. There are journeys in life or in society, so we thought it was an apt title for 2018.
Yes, it's funny, I was just laughing there when you said transitions. I have just taken up golf and I'm watching an awful lot of YouTube videos on how you're meant to hit the ball and strike the ball and things like that.
Yes.
And one of the things they all talk about is the transition for, you know, different parts of your swing, and there's transition.
Yeah.
And I take it it's, you're talking about the same sort of thing in life, in that you're transitioning from one mindset or one way of thinking to another.
Well, that's one way of looking at it. You could be transitioning in all sorts of ways. But back to the game of golf, there's a great book called The Inner Game of Golf, which is about the psychology of how to play good golf. It's about your mindset. And it's really about transitions can be, you know, mindset states of, you know, taking one particular worldview over another, maybe using evidence to change your mind about something. It could be political transitions, like in leadership or presidential elections. It could be the I just saw the results of the American midterms this morning on the television before I came down here. That's another transition, because it's a journey. A transition isn't the end state. It's the journey you make to get from one place to the other. So it can be quite a foggy, nebulous kind of an experience sometimes, because you're like a trapeze artist, you're mid-swing, as it were.
I like the way you're talking. And it's funny, I suppose the difference, or maybe there's some similarities I've discovered in golf, is that you do your practice, you put all these things into place, but then when you actually go to play the game, you blank your mind. You know you don't think about them. You just do it. It's muscle memory.
Yeah, it is. It's the muscle. It's the muscle memory, and you know it's a bit like the whole learning. The whole way we learn is a cycle, where you end up. I'm going to use a jargon term now, Michael. Please forgive me, but you end up in the state of what's called unconscious competent. So you do it without thinking. It's like brushing your teeth, you know, driving or cycling to work. You say, oh, how did I get here? Because you don't think of every single thing. You just kind of do it.
Indeed. You know what? I have, and when now that you say that, that I think is one of probably the most frightening things. You get into a car and you're heading somewhere, you're going every day to work or whatever, and you suddenly arrive in the car park and work, and you have no memory of getting there because it's been just done automatically.
That's correct. You know, you're conscious when you're driving and you're aware of all your moves, but you're not consciously saying, I better put my right foot here, my left foot here, look in the rearview mirror, look in the left mirror. You just have built it in as it's a habit. So it's like any habit. You just do it without thinking.
Indeed. Now, what I did notice, you have a number of, to me, are very interesting talks on. And one of them is, I'm a K-pop fan. And I believe that is Korean pop music. And that's Derek Laffin from the Dunleary Institute.
Yes. What's interesting? What do you find interesting about that, Michael? It's a phenomenon, isn't it, K-pop?
It's just because it's quirky. And that's the...
It is quirky, yeah. We have a stream in our conference, which we started 2 years ago, called the Inspire Sessions. And they're more like TED Talks, you know, like the TED Talk you see sometimes on YouTube. It's 18 minutes, and people can talk about things. They can make it kind of interactive or humorous or funny, or take a topical subject. And it's not as academic, although it is based on a certain amount of evidence. But so in our Inspire sessions, we tend to encourage the more quirky kind of sessions. So this one is looking at this phenomenon of Korean pop, which is amazing when you think about, you know, how it's really just disco dancing that seems to have gone viral, you know. So I was looking at a few videos of it last night myself, and I thought, well, I can remember doing that kind of thing when I was much younger. So what's the big deal about this, you know? So anyway, it's taken off.
And I take it is, although he is talking about K-pop fans, it's this could be spread over all different types of fanships, as you might call it.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting is that there is, I mean, some people are talking about it leading to problems, psychological problems, but in fact, they don't really, and there might be, with any kind of large-scale movement or group, you can't generalise from a couple of cases. So that's what Derek is going to be talking about. He's saying that he doesn't see much evidence of very negative impacts of this. I mean, most young people go through like sort of movements of one sort or another. There was the hippies in the 60s, and okay, there were some casualties there, but a lot of them went on to be very successful, well balanced individuals afterwards, you know. So I think you have to watch out generalizing from, you know, a few cases, really, I think is what he's saying, you know.
Yeah, no, I remember when I was younger, it's a good while ago. But
memory then, have you?
Exactly. You remember you had the punks and you had the rockers and you had the skinheads and you had all these things. And kids or teenagers, young adults, they like to get into groups or to align themselves with one way of thinking, and they go off with that for a while, and then as they get a little older and they mature a bit more, you know, that fades away. And of course, you are naturally enough, there's always going to be a couple of people who will take something too far, just like with, as I was saying, like golf. Some people would take that way too far.
Yeah, you can get fanatics in every walk of life, can't you?
You can indeed,
And I mean, the thing about lots of things is that you some people do take it to extremes, but they are the minority, generally speaking. And it would be unfair to brand everybody with that same kind of brush, if you know. I think you're right. I mean, we're actually a lot. You know, we're generally speaking, we're social creatures, and we like to work with others, and we like to be in groups. And you know, last year our theme was identity, you know, people like to identify with groups that are like themselves. So, for in Twitter, you know, you tend just to hang out with the people that are think the same as you do. Now, that sometimes is not good for diversity, but we have a tendency to sort of gravitate towards things that, you know, groups that, you know, align with our own view of things, you know.
Indeed. And another one that caught my eye was on obesity. That it's not as simple as calorie versus calories in versus calories out.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of controversy over the whole area of obesity. There's a lot written in the papers. In fact, I was only reading a journalist yesterday in the London Times, the version we get here in Dublin, and someone is talking about that there. But you have to be very careful about, you know, there's no evidence. There's lots of research being done, but we're uncovering more and more about what the underlying causes of obesity might be. You know, eating a lot or drinking a lot could be a symptom of something else. So it may not be the underlying cause. It's maybe a symptom of something else that could be going on. And some of the things that are postulated that could be happening in behind all of that could be childhood experiences, abuse maybe, or maltreatment, or some emotional trauma that's unresolved. I mean, that's just a theory. It has to be tested. But I think just to simply say, you know, it's what you eat and what you drink, it is. I mean, physically it is, because obviously the more you eat, the more, and if you don't exercise, the more likely you are to put on weight. But eating in itself, there may be other reasons for it. Do you know what I mean? So I think that's what we're trying to find out is, you know, what really should we be doing about obesity?
And it's basically saying before anyone thinks of going for the surgery option, we should be looking at what are the underlying causes of overeating.
I think so. Yeah, I mean, I remember some time ago seeing a program about this based in the States, and there was a very quick rush to the surgery, but. From if you looked at the family relationships that were going on, much more in depth study of the family relationships could uncover dynamics within the family or within the relationships that might have some kind of bearing on what is happening to the individual, and maybe addressing some of those dynamics might have more fruit than just going straight into a medical solution. I'm not decrying medical solutions. They're absolutely essential in certain cases. But sometimes we don't do enough due diligence into what really is going on.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. And, you know, often you will find it's not just one person is overweight or has an eating disorder. I think the whole family, there may be something going on. There's some dynamic in the family.
Yeah, I mean, I think there could be all sorts of reasons. I mean, some factors that are associated with obesity are socioeconomic conditions, for example. They could be stress related. They could be, as I say, psychological, emotional disturbances of some sort. There could be a family pattern. You do see families where all of the family have a weight issue, but then you might look at diet and you might look at socioeconomic conditions, you might look at a whole range of things. Maybe it's just part of being, as I said about the social identification, identifying with a group. So it's quite a complicated area, and simple solutions sometimes are, you know, they may look simple, but the issue itself is quite complicated. It's like addiction is also complicated. Gambling is complicated. We need to know a lot more about what's behind a lot of these things. sometimes, and spend some time in prevention as well as that, you know. So I think that's really important.
One last thing I was going to ask you about was, it's something that it really does interest me, is one on, it's called Take My Hand. It's about listening to young people in inpatients.
Mm. Yeah.
Maybe you could tell us a little about that.
Yeah, well, one of the people that doing that is Niall Muldoon, who's a member of the Psychological Society and is actually the Ombudsman for Children. And Niall has been talking to children directly about their experiences. And I think that's really important. We sometimes forget. I mean, it's very interesting because I was actually in my hotel room, a bathroom this morning. This has a purpose. And I thought, you know, the sink here, no child could reach the level of this sink unless there was an adult with them to lift them up to wash their hands. And it got me thinking about how, you know, adult-centric we are. That, you know, things are designed for tall people, you know, people over 4 feet anyway. And they're not designed for children. And we talk about children's issues and children's health. We talk about them, but we don't ask them to tell us what it's like for them. And that's what Niall's trying to do, and in his office as well, is making it much more children-centered, children-focused. So he'll be talking about that tomorrow morning, and just by actually talking directly to young children and hearing their experiences of mental health services. And, you know, it's like when you're in the business world, you know, if you want to improve your customer service, you ask your customer.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll tell you, or the frontline staff who deal with the customer, they'll tell you, you know, what the issues are. And it's the same with services. Ask the people who are at the receiving end of it what it's like for them and how you can redesign it or shape it more in line with, you know, their experience and how frightening it is for small children or adolescents, and, you know, what you can do to just make the experience more humane and more bearable. So I think these issues are all very important. And these and many other will be covered at our conference, Michael, this week.
Indeed. And if any of our listeners want to know a bit more or get some more information on the conference, how can they do that?
Well, they can get onto our website, www.psychologicalsociety.ie. And go to the conference piece on the website, and they'll get all the details there. It's in Wexford. There's a public talk tonight in the Clayton White's Hotel, which is where the conference is, and it's on resilience in the real world, and it's by Neil Fitzpatrick. And that'll be looking at how to cope with stresses and strains of the real world. And Niamh is a psychologist as well, with a lot of experience, a personal experience as well, which he'll be talking about at 6:30 this evening in the hotel. If anybody in Wexford, I don't think anybody in Wexford is picking up your station, but if they
go online to www.near.ie, they can pick us up.
They can pick it up. And that talk is at 6:30 in the hotel. It's free to the public. We do this every year. We have a free public talk, so we talk about issues of you know, relevance to the public as well. And we always try to make psychology more accessible than, you know, what we know about human behaviour and emotions and well-being. We try and get that out as much as we can through the Psychological Society work that we do. So anybody who's interested, please just turn up.
And will any of these talks be recorded?
This one won't be recorded at Niamh's request because of some personal experiences mm-hmm. she's going to talk about, and there won't be any Twitter feeds or anything on it. So, and we'll honour that request. But some of our other talks, the abstracts are up on the website.
Terry, it's been an absolute pleasure as always talking to you, and thank you for taking the time to having a chat with us this morning.
Thanks, and good luck with the golf.
I'm keeping the fingers crossed.
All right. Thanks very much.
All the best. Slán leat. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.